Support for WPR comes from the Stevens Point area, offering a variety of getaway experiences, itineraries and ideas for beer lovers, foodies, outdoor recreation fans, and more are at StevensPointArea.com.
Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University, dedicated to supporting teachers for over 130 years, with master's degree and licensure options online and regionally. Viterbo.edu/graduate.
Yes, you like potato, I like potato. You like tomato, I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. Let's call the whole thing off.
Too bad our first guest this hour wasn't at the White House when President Obama was meeting with Democratic and Republican leaders weeks ago. Maybe we wouldn't be in this stalemate today with competing proposals on both sides of the political aisle with very little common ground in sight and a debt limit deadline looming just days away. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Thursday, July the 28th. We have with us, just for the first 15 minutes or so of the program, as he is in high demand today doing national interviews on the debt limit stalemate, Stuart Diamond, a professor of negotiations at the Wharton Business School of the University of Pennsylvania. He was a very well-received guest on Wisconsin Public Radio when we had him on to talk about his latest book, Getting More, How to Negotiate to Achieve Your Goals in the Real World. And we'll have time, perhaps, for a question or two if you have one for him at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Stuart Diamond joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So we see a piece here that you wrote, and you think that it's already too late to really get a good deal
here. The rating agencies want to see cooperation, or else they're going to downgrade the U.S. Credit rating, and we're going to all pay hundreds of billions of dollars of extra interest, more than all the jobs lost from the recession. It's too late to be slapping together spending and cutting plans now. What the Congress needs to do is show the rating agencies and the world, for that matter, that they can actually cooperate on something. And that means they need to postpone the August 2nd deadline for a few weeks or months, borrow them the shortfall they need through T-bills, things like that, and then have a serious discussion with outside experts, starting with the easy things on what they're going to do here.
Yeah. Isn't there also the option of passing a bill that authorizes a hike in the debt ceiling without this deficit reduction package?
That's right. That would also be fine. They need to increase the debt ceiling so the U.S. can pay its past bills and show the rest of the world that we will pay our bills. This is very, very serious because the U.S. depends for its borrowing in large part on investor confidence in treasury bills. If the U.S. does not pay interest on those treasury bills, then China, Japan, and other countries will either stop or slow buying U.S. Treasuries, and then we're really in trouble.
Yeah, well, what's wrong with a vote set today in the House on Speaker Boehner's deficit reduction plan?
Well, the problem is there's two plans. There's Reid's plan in the Democrats in the Senate, and there's Boehner's plan. They're both competing and conflicting with each other, and there's not a lot of overlap here. There's some, but not a lot. And so, therefore, it doesn't seem likely they can get enough votes to approve either plan.
Yeah.
And even if they do, they're way below where they need to be. It'll be months of sniping and backbiting, and they will not have shown the kind of spirit of cooperation necessary to keep our debt rating.
What happened here?
What happened here is the people that run the government don't have enough negotiation skills to not fall into the trap of getting really emotional when something important happens and lose sight of their goals. And they've been blaming people for yesterday. They've been sniping. They've got a conflict model instead of a collaboration model, which is the model too many people fall back on. And they went about it the wrong way. They needed to start small, talk about the things they already agree with, and build up gradually over a period of months. They had a year to do this, and they were unable to do it. I don't think they can do this at a deadline, so they need more time to get their act together.
Talk some, if you will, about the there's a group in Congress, the Tea Party Republicans, for lack of a better term, who are saying we will not compromise. We will not vote. Some are saying we will not vote to raise the debt ceiling, period. Others are saying no vote if there's any tax hikes at all in this deficit reduction plan.
That is exactly like saying we will deprive the country of millions of jobs. That is like saying we'll plunge the country back into a recession. Because if we don't raise a debt limit, or at least postpone, don't raise debt limit and postpone a decision at the least on the amount we need to cut and the amount we need to spend, we're not going to pay our bills. Our credit rate is going to go down. We're going to face billions and hundreds of billions of dollars worth of extra interest, and the rest of the world's not going to buy our borrowings. This is really serious. This is not a sort of some political machination here. And it seems that when people get emotional, they lose sight of the seriousness of their goals and focus only on their narrow individual emotional needs at the moment. And that's what's going on here. And the stakes are very high.
Really, would our elected representatives, our senators and Congress people risk the United States going into economic default?
You bet. The whole country is at serious risk here, and it doesn't seem that the average person in the street appreciates how serious the situation is. And it also seems that many people who are intelligent and in Congress are too emotional to appreciate it. When one gets emotional and when deadlines approach, information processing declines. And that's also what's going on here. In about 3 or 4 days, unless the government can get cash for a few more days than that, people are going to wish this never happened.
Give us a grade, if you will, of congressional Republicans, congressional Democrats, and President Obama.
Yeah, I'm sorry to say that they all fail.
Why?
I figure, as a negotiator, that if something doesn't go right, it's always my fault. Because I have to provide the skills necessary to persuade other people. So this has been going on for months. The Democrats had business to make this the kind of issue insistence they're doing now, months ago, before the deadlines. The Republicans are holding the country hostage right now with this debt limit, which is, you know, unconscionable in my view. And the Democrats, both sides are walking out. Both sides are conflicting with each other. It takes two to make an argument. When a husband and wife argue, when you say who's at fault, you've got to say both most of the time. And that's where we are here.
President Obama yesterday kept on telling congressional Republicans and Democrats, for that matter, forget about these competing plans, these separate things. Compromise, compromise, compromise.
Right, and that's at the 11th hour and 50 minutes. Okay, after positions are hardened, after there are a conflict, you know, one round of golf with Boehner wasn't enough. And also, if there was compromise, and he should be focusing on not, he proposed a $4 trillion plan last week. That's not compromise, in my view. That's a huge, extreme offer, just like the Republicans proposed a $6 trillion deal. Those are much too big and much too complicated and have much too much in it to get the constituency buy-in necessary to do a deal, especially on deadline. And so you got to look at the actions, not just the words.
Mm-hmm. One of our listeners on Facebook wants me to ask you, why does it seem compromise is a dirty word in politics?
Well, it doesn't actually use standards. It's just, first of all, encourages extreme offers, right? I'll make one extreme offer, you make another extreme offer, we'll meet in the middle. It doesn't really smack of fairness. And second, you tend to think the person who gives in a little bit more is too weak. And so it's really a dirty word everywhere, not in politics. I think collaboration, where both parties start from a common ground, is better than compromise when both parties start from different grounds. That's really the difference between those two. So the parties need to start a lot smaller, find out what they agree on. They both agree that we're going to save a lot of money from getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan. They ought to look at what they already agree on and say, this is a basis to proceed. Let's postpone this deadline here, temporarily raise the debt limit, start over again, get some outside experts, and do this right.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the general public blames one side or the other for this stalemate?
I'm sure of it, and that's also the wrong thing to do, because we can't do anything about blame. What we can do about is tomorrow. What do we do now? And so thinking about yesterday, every moment we think about yesterday is a moment we don't fix tomorrow. And so there's no time for blame now. There's time for getting this done in a way that we don't lose our economy.
Mm-hmm. Well, you say this is what ought to happen, that this that we need to raise the debt limit or postpone the deadline. Do you think that will happen?
I don't know. This is a lot of people in Washington here haven't seen much like this before. I assume they'll come to some kind of what they call a cockamamie agreement at the deadline, but it will not be the kind of decent agreement they need for the long term to stop the sniping. And I'm not sure it'll be the kind of agreement necessary to convince Standard & Poor's and Moody's that we've actually cooperated with each other. So I think we're going to need a miracle.
Well, if that miracle occurs, do you think that there's hope with this Congress and the state of politics today that some sort of grand deal can be reached on deficit reduction?
They need an attitude adjustment. That's where it starts from. All of negotiation starts with the attitude you bring. If you bring a conflict attitude, that's what you get. And so a lot of people are talking about civility. I think Congress needs some help from their constituencies and from the media who says, we elected you all to do your job, and you're not doing it for us. You got to change.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Okay.
Stuart Diamond, professor of negotiations at the Wharton Business School of the University of Pennsylvania, author of Getting More, How to Negotiate to Achieve Your Goals in the Real World. He's on his way to do a national television interview now, so he's in demand today as he is a negotiations expert. We'll get another guest to talk with us for the remainder of the hour on the state of the stalemate today and the what's at stake politically and economically. 1-800-642-1234 if you want to weigh in. You can also send an email, talk@WPR.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. In our weather forecast for today, showers and thunderstorms are likely in southern Wisconsin, and there is a chance everywhere else except in the northwest. Otherwise, in between the rain, clouds, and morning fog, highs today will be in the mid-80s. Showers and thunderstorms are also in a flash flood watch area, which is in far southern Wisconsin, until early on Friday morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 21 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Thursday, July the 28th. Coming up this afternoon after 4 o'clock, our series, our candidate forum series, continues during At Issue with Ben Marins. Ben will be talking with the incumbent Republican State Senator Luther Olson from 4 until 4:30, and we'll be talking with his Democratic challenger, Fred Clark, from 4:30 until 5. Our candidate forum series continues after 7 o'clock this morning. We will be talking with Republican State Senator Dan Kopanky after 7 and his Democratic challenger, Jennifer Schilling, after 7:30. Right now, we continue talking about the debt ceiling stalemate and welcoming your thoughts and questions for our guest political and economic expert. Joining us now to talk more about the political and economic consequences of the debt ceiling standoff is Steve Smith, political science professor and director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. Good morning, Professor Smith.
Good morning.
Well, we just heard from a negotiations expert, Stuart Diamond, who's with the Wharton Business School at the University of Pennsylvania, who says that just got to postpone this debt ceiling deadline or raise the debt ceiling temporarily because no good is going to come out of these negotiations for deficit reduction. Do you think that's possible? Do you think that could happen?
Well, it could, but I think it's going to happen only if the leadership, Reid and Boehner, maybe even the president, agree that they're within a few days of completing additional negotiations and that they see a path toward completing those negotiations. I think that would be a circumstance where they'd all say, yeah, we can do something like a very temporary fix. But something that's anything more than that, say a month or 2 months, or as Boehner suggests, 6 months, clearly is unacceptable to the Democrats because they feel it just puts off the inevitable decisions that have to be made. You know, there's an awful lot of talk among negotiation experts about how to address this situation, but most of what they have to say has to do with two individuals who are negotiating a contract for business or a divorce agreement or something of that mm-hmm. sort. We have a situation here in which we have elected leaders of Congress, each of whom represents an immediate constituency, a large party caucus. Speaker Boehner, after all, has 240 constituents in the House of Representatives, and Reid has 53 in the Senate. And then each one of those representatives represents, you know, in the House, 700,000 people back home, or in the Senate, an average of about 6 million people back home. And so the negotiations occur at multiple levels in something like this, where each person, each member of Congress has a vote. And it's not enough for Boehner and Reid to simmer down and do what's right. They also have to carry the day with, in the case of Boehner, a majority of the House of Representatives, comprised almost entirely of members of his own party, it seems. Or in the case of Reid, he has to pick up 53 Democratic votes and 7 more Republican votes in order to overcome a filibuster in the Senate, which surely will be put on any agreement. So, you know, I think Boehner and Reid are professional politicians. I think if they sat down behind closed doors, they'd have an agreement within a couple of days. But it's carrying, it's representing a larger party and winning majorities or supermajorities, that's the real complication. Mm-hmm. And honestly, negotiation experts don't tell us much about that.
Yeah. Well, House Speaker John Boehner's deficit reduction plan and debt ceiling lifting plan is set today in the House of Representatives.
Right.
It was delayed a day because it apparently didn't cut as much money or save as much money as he originally said, and he didn't have the votes. Does he have them now?
Well, he may have the votes now. They had a pretty serious meeting yesterday morning, and I think many of the conservative wing of his party, the so-called Tea Party group, are coming around to the view that the party will suffer irreparable harm in their standing with the public if they're seen as incapable of passing anything in the House. And if they can't pass the Boehner version, then that might very well be the case. So I think he'll win an absolute bare minimum number of votes. The easiest vote here is to vote no, because you can always be for something else. So he's not going to ask any more of his colleagues to walk the plank for him than he absolutely has to. But I think he'll pull it out. And, of course, it'll be dead on arrival in the Senate. And it's not clear that anything can get 60 votes in the Senate, a Reid plan, a Boehner plan, any plan. And so we knew, we've known for days that this really comes down to Boehner and Reid trying to negotiate something and then persuading enough of their colleagues to support it. Mm-hmm. That game hasn't changed a bit.
Well, I've seen some political observers saying that maybe Harry Reid and the Democrats in the Senate will be whistling another tune if this House plan is passed and sent to the Senate, because then, you know, the blame is in the Senate with the Democrats if nothing happens.
Well, it certainly would be true that many in the public would see Boehner's proposal as at least, you know, minimally acceptable. And if the Senate Democrats then turn it down, some of the blame, more blame, would be shifted to them. But Reid's reality is, and I think the reality in the media coverage would be, that it's very difficult to get 60 votes in the Senate. Reid could even get all 53 Democrats to support some plan, and he still couldn't pass it in the Senate. You know, surely everyone realizes that there are about 20 Republicans in the Senate who signed a letter indicating that they don't intend to support any increase in the debt limit until, you know, the more complete Republican plan is on the table. Well, that won't be on the table. It's not even in the Boehner plan. And so there's 20 votes, you know, you can throw out right away. There's only 23 Republicans left at that point. And somehow you have to get about a third of them to support the some plan that's acceptable to all the Democrats. So the threshold all along here, a great deal of focus on Boehner's ability to get something through the House, but the tougher obstacle has always been the Senate, where you really need 60 votes.
We have only a minute or so before our news break, but we have callers already lined up. Scott in Duluth, go ahead, please.
Yes. Everybody listening to this radio program needs to call Washington. The House of Representatives phone number is 202-224-3121. Everybody listening also needs to send an email to everybody on their contact list that we are in control of the government. We are in control. We are the people, and we will contact these people and let them know that they will not commit suicide, national suicide. No, it's not going to happen. It needs to be a wave that sweeps through the country today. Everybody listening needs to send an email, contact the Senate, contact the House of Representatives, tell them they will not be reelected, absolutely will not, especially the Tea Partiers who are not willing to compromise at all.
Thank you very much, Scott. We have less than 30 seconds before news. Steve Smith, could that make a difference?
Well, the fact is virtually all of the communications members of Congress are getting from their constituents, and they're getting huge waves of communications, are really quite partisan. Republicans are from Republican districts, and they're being told to stick to their guns.
No.
And Democrats are being told to stick to their guns.
Let me hold you there, and we will continue after we check the latest news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Well, we just heard in state news that a flash flood watch is in effect for far southern Wisconsin until early Friday morning. And this just in, holy moly, a major flash flood event is going on this morning in Dubuque, Iowa. Water rescues are ongoing. Bridges are impassable. Major highways are shut down, including a section of U.S. 52. An all-time 24-hour rain record has been set with more than 10 inches of rain falling in the Dubuque area. No injuries have been reported. Thanks to Bill Mertens for passing along that information that he got from the Weather Channel. So take care, especially in Dubuque. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 6:37 on this Thursday, July the 28th. We are talking about the latest deals on the table and the consequences of failure when it comes to deficit reduction and lifting the debt ceiling. There is a vote scheduled for today in the House on Speaker John Boehner's deficit reduction plan. It's a plan that Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid has said is dead on arrival in the Senate. All this going on as the August 2nd deadline is fast approaching. We welcome your thoughts, your questions on this for our guest expert, Steve Smith, political science professor, director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And now we will take many more of your calls. Steve in Trago, or is it Trigo, is with us now.
It's Trigo. Thank you, Joy.
Good morning.
Yeah, I just think that it's time for President Obama to invoke the 14th Amendment. He's got multiple members, Democratic members of the House, former President Bill Clinton. I think at this point, Wall Street and the Chamber of Commerce would approve. And certainly, all of his supporters and his base across the country would approve. And I think that if he doesn't do this, this issue will become to the 2012 elections what the botched, in my view, healthcare debate was to the 2010 elections.
Professor Smith?
Well, you know, there are many people who are thinking that, you know, the president will actually have to turn to the Constitution for guidance about what to do should Congress fail to raise the debt limit. The 14th Amendment has a section 4, that says that simply that the validity of the public debt of the United States shall not be questioned, which is interpreted by many to mean that the president cannot play games with the public debt. This was a post-Civil War amendment adopted at a time when how to handle public debt, state debts, especially Confederacy debt, and the U.S. debt, which was considerable during the Civil War, was a pretty serious issue. There was a worry that the government would just simply ignore its debt, which, of course, would have created an economic calamity. So they stuck this provision in. And it's read by some now to mean that if the debt limit isn't raised, that the president must give servicing our debt the number one priority. So even if he invoked the 14th Amendment, and my interpretation of it, and I think many others, it merely sets a priority for the president in what he has to pay for should that debt limit be raised. After all, revenues will continue to come in. The question is, how can he pay all the bills? And he'll have to set some priorities, and this would make servicing the debt the highest priority. It doesn't free him of the obligation to observe that law, that is the debt limit, and that's where the problem arises. Then he'd have to set some priorities on other kinds of federal spending beyond servicing the debt, and there's really no guidance in the Constitution or in the 14th Amendment on how he should do that.
Is it true that Congress could just simply set aside, you know, any kind of grand bargain or big deal in deficit reduction and just say, we'll put that aside for now and just pass a one-page bill that raises the debt limit?
Absolutely. Section 3101 of the U.S. Code provides a two-sentence description of the debt limit, and there's one number in there. And that number's been changed, increased many, many times. Congress could pass a one-sentence bill that increases that number to whatever they want it to be. And, of course, that's what they've generally done, is simply pass a simple increase in that debt limit. They could do that in minutes.
Yeah, so why don't they?
Well, because the Republican House decided that this was a source of leverage for them over the president. And the democratically controlled Senate, basically it's a game of brinksmanship. They're willing to say to the president and the Senate, we're not going to increase this debt limit unless you agree to some budget cuts or a larger plan. And so the House Republicans' first effort at this was, an effort to cut. To cap and to balance, that is to pass a constitutional amendment requiring an annually balanced budget as a condition for increasing the debt limit. Clearly that was defeated in the Senate, and so now they're back negotiating some alternative plan, and the Boehner plan, the Reid plan, are efforts to come to terms with that demand without meeting the full Republican demand. And it's not clear how far Boehner can go. Obviously, he's representing a caucus in the House Republicans who want to use this opportunity to radically restructure the federal government. They're committed to that, and many of them will resent giving up yet another opportunity to get that done. Remember, they wanted to do that as a condition for passing the appropriations bills back in April, And, of course, there'll be other opportunities for them. The next point of leverage really is the adoption of appropriations bills that will fund the federal government come October 1st. So even if we get past this debt limit crisis, this kind of self-created, we'll have another one in October when, you know, we might face another government shutdown over the issue of the appropriations bills.
Mike in Palmyra is with us now. Hello, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
I just wanted to ask if, since I know our credit rating isn't necessarily hurt yet, but just other countries and just us behaving this way, I kind of think that, you know, it's causing damage already. I just wanted to get opinions on this.
Mm-hmm. Is it causing damage already, Professor Smith?
Well, I think it's making people nervous, but, you know, the world economy is not in great shape. Many governments are facing budget crises. Many economies are in much worse shape than the U.S. economy. And so if you're an investor somewhere around the world, wondering where you should park your money, doing it in dollars and doing it in U.S. Treasury still seems like a pretty good deal. But events like this begin to make people nervous. If we can't solve our problems and get this debt limit increased so that our debt can be serviced in a normal way, it certainly will undermine confidence in both the dollar and in investing in U.S. Treasuries. And then the bigger picture is, where is our economy heading, which in turn makes people worry a little bit about the federal budget. If the federal budget is out of control, then it's eventually going to have pretty serious economic consequences, undermine the role of the dollar in the world economy, and make people nervous about buying long-term treasury bonds, which will, severely undermine our ability to borrow, which we'll have to continue to do, make it more expensive, and probably increase the cost of borrowing for everyone, not only in the United States, but probably across the world. And that's what economists really worry about. When you increase the cost of borrowing, you slow down economies. And so this is a pretty serious matter because of the central role the U.S. and the U.S. dollar plays in that system.
Professor Smith, what happens on August 2nd should there be no deal? What happens on that day?
Well, if the Treasury Department says that on that day they've actually reached the debt limit, they are technically prohibited from borrowing any more money. And because on that day they're going to have more bills to pay than they have revenue coming in the form of tax revenues, they're going to have to set some priorities, and they won't be able to pay all of their bills. They probably will service the debt before they do anything else. My guess is that they'd probably try to meet the demand for cash from Social Security, from Medicare, and from the major programs, but I'm guessing that there will be dozens, maybe hundreds, of small federal programs whose bills will not get paid. And then that'll get worse and worse and worse day after day after day as the gap between revenues and bills, continues day after day after day. And so the number of bills that go unpaid becomes much larger as time goes on, if they observe that debt limit. Now, there's an alternative theory, and that is that the president will assert some form of special constitutional powers to prevent such a calamity. It could be calamitous. Imagine that you're a small subcontractor under a larger contract, say for Boeing, and the Defense Department cannot pay its bills. Well, many of these small subcontractors simply will go under. They really don't have other sources of income. They would no longer be able to pay their own bills. Many of them are so small, many people who service the federal government are so small that they can't go to the bank and get a loan. Boeing can. I don't worry about Boeing or General Electric. I do worry about the small subcontractor who's providing a small part to a larger project. And believe me, there are tens of thousands of those in the U.S. economy who are very dependent on the U.S. government actually paying its bills on time.
We are talking about the political and economic consequences of the debt ceiling standoff. Our guest is Steve Smith, political science professor, director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. If you would like to weigh in on this debate and its consequences, or if you have a question for Professor Smith, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, or send us a tweet at Joy Cardine Show on Twitter. In our weather forecast for today, showers and thunderstorms likely in southern Wisconsin, a chance everywhere else except the northwest. In between rain, clouds, and morning fog, highs today in the mid-80s. There is a flash flood watch in effect for far southern Wisconsin until early Friday morning. There is a major flash flood event ongoing this morning in Dubuque, Iowa. Water rescues are happening. Bridges are impassable. Major highways are shut down. An all-time 24-hour rain record has been set in the Dubuque area with more than 10 inches. And in southern Wisconsin, showers and thunderstorms will most likely end by mid-morning, but develop again late this afternoon and tonight. Very heavy rainfall with rates between 1 and 3 inches per hour expected, which could result in flash flooding. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. Our candidate forum series for the upcoming recall elections in the state Senate will continue after 7 o'clock this morning with Republican State Senator Dan Kopanky in the 32nd Senate District joining us first, and after 7:30, the Democratic challenger, State Representative Jennifer Schilling. To more of your phone calls now on the debt limit stalemate, our guest Steve Smith, who is a political science professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Our next caller is Steve in Madison. Hello, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Everyone knows it's a false manufactured crisis. And although the last guest said that there's no point in assigning blame, he's quite wrong. But that entirely avoids naming names. Let's see. The elephant in the room will be Grover Norquist. So my question to the guest is, by what strategy and to what purpose has the unelected Grover Norquist made himself more politically powerful and effective than the president, the leaders of the House and Senate combined?
Yeah, Grover Norquist has this tax increase pledge that many of the so-called Tea Party Republicans have signed, Professor Smith?
Well, that's right, and he's been around for years, and politicians have signed his pledge for years. Excuse me. So he's come into play here mainly because of the power of the Tea Party forces within the Republican Party, which are really quite separate from him. He's getting a lot of credit, you know, for influence that really is not due to him. The fact is that Republican politics in many parts of the country have changed a lot. So that winning a Republican nomination for Congress is very difficult unless you're taking a very conservative position on fiscal issues, social issues and others too, but certainly on fiscal issues. And the Tea Party has arisen mainly because of those concerns about fiscal issues. And so there are many, many Republicans who feel that they might be challenged and successfully challenged in their next primary if they give in even an inch on a fiscal policy issue like increasing taxes. And so it's partly a question of the Norquist pledge, but the bigger picture is how Republican politics, primary politics, have changed. These guys worry about getting on the November ballot again if they should compromise with the Democrats on taxes.
Thank you very much, Steve, for the call. Greg in Milwaukee is with us now. Hello, Greg.
Hello, thank you. I was wondering, can they be just directly impeached? All the people who won't sign for a tax increase, for a debt ceiling increase, can they just be impeached? We have to have it. I mean, we're going to go under as a country.
No, we don't have any provision in law for impeaching a member of Congress in the way you're thinking of it, I'm sure. We don't have a recall system for members of Congress the way we do for state legislators in some states, like Wisconsin.
Right.
And so, you're more or less stuck with this crowd for the full two-year term in the case of members of the House and 6 years in the case of the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, I'm told there have been some calls for President Obama's impeachment if we default. Is that impeachable?
It probably is not. An impeachable offense would generally be an offense that involves breaking the law. So if he is observing the debt limit and is forced to not pay the bills because he's observing the law, then I don't think impeachment really is even appropriate, and I don't think members of Congress would quite see it that way. On the other hand, if Congress failed to raise the debt limit and the president ignored the debt limit, then I wouldn't be surprised that if Republicans in the House decided to call for his impeachment. I'm not sure they'd get anywhere. The president certainly would have a legal argument to make about his actions. That seems to be a more likely scenario.
Our next caller is Jim in Irma. Hello, Jim.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for the show. This goes back to your earlier part of your program with a discussion of compromise, and usually a compromise involves two parties that want a similar outcome. The football players wanted to play football, and the owners wanted to make the money. So they had a reason to work together. I think we have a different situation here where the Republicans really, their stated goal is to undo this administration, to make the country worse off so that in 12 months they can say, look, we told you so, let's throw this bomb out and make a different change. So I don't think we have a typical compromise here situation where the goal is the same. We have one party that wants to run this country in the ground, their stated goal, and the other country that is trying to, keep us from going broke, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a little bit more generous than Jim is, I think, my interpretation. I think there are serious and deep differences between the two parties about the future, the proper role of the federal government. And it's certainly true that these views or visions for the role of government in American life are very, very different. And they're coming to a head here as Republicans think this is the point at which they have to impose their point of view, or they're going to lose the leverage and be forced to negotiate and compromise. And they don't want to do that. Democrats, on the other hand, say, if we can't make a stand here, then where can we make a stand? But the differences between the two of them are very different. I assume that both want the best things for the country, but they see the role of government in that as being very different.
And Rick in, I'm not sure you could be in North Dakota, Rick, but go ahead.
I'm driving through the state of Wisconsin right now, but being from North Dakota,
okay,
one of four states that has a surplus budget balance, I guess myself and my neighbors, as we talk, and, maybe this is just too much common sense for the intellectuals that are in Washington, D.C., and we're not Harvard grads, but what's wrong with a balanced budget? All these problems that this Professor Smith and you and everybody in this country that talks on the media, the problem is the government has spent too much money.
Thank you very much, Rick. Well, that the balanced budget amendment is a part of House Speaker Boehner's bill that goes before the House today, isn't it, Steve Smith?
Well, it provides for its consideration, that's right, as a condition for taking up a second step increase in the debt limit. So that is what the House Republicans are proposing. But the question is really whether or not what the best approach to addressing our fiscal problems are. There's hardly a Democrat who wouldn't argue that we have to take serious action to address the deficit problem. They simply have a different formula for addressing it. Clearly, the Democrats would like tax increases. Cleaning up the tax code to be an important part of that solution. And it's an open question is whether or not a balanced budget could actually force Congress to actually balance the budget. You would still require members of Congress to cast votes, to cut programs and to increase revenues. And that's what they have trouble doing.
And we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. Steve Smith, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joy.
Steve Smith, political science professor, director of the Wiedebaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis.